Thank you very much. Everyone can hear me, yes? Well, good. So my name is Mark Barlet. Couple things you need to know about me. I am in hiding in the bushes because in the last 2 years I've lost 116 pounds and I don't have any really good press shots of me. So I was smart enough to take that one 2 years ago and I'll use that. I also, because I'm here at Microsoft, want to say a couple of things. During the day, I work for the Department of Homeland Security. I make Americans, so I actually work to make sure that people who want to become Americans can become Americans. I'm an industrial engineer. For those that don't know, that means I make processes. And obviously, becoming an American citizen is a pretty hefty process. I also am really good at PowerPoint, which in the government is like a magical power. So if there's anyone here on the office team, I want to say thank you so much for blessing me with a career, because my slideshows look like magic compared to what I have to do in the government. So I wanted to start by saying thank you. I do want to start with a word of warning. From time to time, I'm known for not being as politically correct as someone would expect me to be. And I may say something that you find offensive. I live with my disability, the disabilities of my friends, and the people that work with Able Gamers every day. In order for this talk to work, I'm gonna kind of be blunt. And it's because disability can sometimes be funny. So this is my warning. I wanna tell you guys some stories, story time with Mark. I've been doing this now for 14 and a half years. And it hasn't always been that much fun. This talk is going to be broken down into four chapters. I have to remember that she's there. And chapter one I want to tell you about, which is forcing accessibility in Azeroth. Who knows what Azeroth is? I'm sorry. I have a confession to make. The confession to make is I am a bully. When it comes to accessibility, I will bully my way into the door. First story I want to tell you about is World of Warcraft. At the height, World of Warcraft had 12 million subscribers, literally dump trucks of money pulled into Blizzard and just dumped it into the yard every month. And they didn't even go pick it up. Some of it blew away. They didn't even care. That's how much money they were bringing in. Now, this game has 100 million accounts. And at the height of 12 million people, people with disabilities were big players. I want you guys to understand how big 12 million is. That is the entire population of those states. That's how many accounts. That's 100 million. Every person in this state had an account. That's crazy. When you have a game like that, and celebrities, video games, even my PowerPoint people should do this when it comes to me. You end up building layers between your fan base and your decision makers. And that's important because, frankly, half the opinions of a player never work. Everyone has a complaint. You nerfed this. You nerfed that. These people are overpowered. I have a better idea. You suck. It's great. So they put walls between them. Now, in 2009, when Able Gamers was out there, we kept getting people that were sending us email. I've been banned from Able Gamers. I use this particular keyboard because I have this particular disability, and I was flagged as a cheater and banned, but I'm not a cheater. I'm just a person with disabilities trying to play this great game. Now, here's the thing. I'm out here in the circle. I'm out here in this circle. Who am I going to talk to? So in 2009, an opportunity arose, and I got invited to talk at GDC. Now, when I said I am a bully, you're going to find out why. And in fact, Tara is one of the people that called me a bully. So I thought, how can I get the attention of the decision makers, because I'm at least one or two steps in the circle because I'm talking at GDC. How could I get their attention? And here's what I came up with. I had a shirt made. And the shirt said, Blizzard hates disabled gamers. And on the back it said, ask me for details. I couldn't put the back up there. Now, do I think that Blizzard hates people with disabilities? I don't. But I had one shot. I had one shot to advocate for people who were playing this game who were locked out. Because remember, I'm on the outside of that circle. Who am I going to call? Nobody. So I asked Michelle Hinn to share the fact that this shirt, so she's complicit in this, this shirt existed. And it really does exist. It hangs in the bathroom at Able Gamers headquarters. And on the first day, there was a panel, and we're going to go way back. It was a panel, and Rob Pardo, who is the CEO of Activision or of Blizzard, and they were talking about the American all-you-can-eat model when it comes to MMORPGs and the Asian pay-as-you-go model. And as you go to any panel, at the end of the panel, there was a dais, and people kind of came up to it. And I stood in front of the dais, and Rob Pardo looked at me, and he goes, so what's your question? And I said, hey, why do you hate people with disabilities? He said, you and I need to talk. That's immediately what he said. He goes, you and I need to talk. And I was handing my card to all of the reporters that turned to me when I asked that question. And he goes, do you mind if you'll wait over there for me? And I said, absolutely, I'll wait over there. So I waited over there, and he finished holding court. That's what I always call that at the end of the day. At the end of this talk, you're welcome to rush up here before lunch, and we'll hold court. And he said, hey, why would you say that? And I explained to him, and he went, this is the first time I've heard of this. And I said, well, I'm on the outside. I needed to find a way to get in real quick. And he's like, well, I heard this shirt existed. And I'm like, it does. And he goes, well, what do I do to make sure that that shirt never sees the light of day? I said, I need contacts. I need people within your organization with the power to let me vet people who are being banned and email them to say, this is a real case of a person with disabilities not able to play their game. And he said, that's a deal. He goes, are you going to be at this accessibility meetup tomorrow? And I said, yes, of course I will be. He goes, there'll be three people that will show up there for you. Those will be your contacts. And then he says, so what about this shirt? And I just looked at him and said, what shirt? And he said, good. So that's why I'm a bully, because as an advocate, I'm on the outside, and I have to find a way to go through the layers. I will want to just say as a side note to my visually impaired friends, almost nothing on my slides have value other than their notes to me. When there is something that you specifically need to know, I'll let you know. But really, I'm using PowerPoint as PowerPoint was designed to do, which is to just give you visual flavor to your presentation. I will say to the PowerPoint team, you've killed more people than anything else too because of death by PowerPoint. And because I do work in the government, my soul has died many times. So chapter two of the story I want to tell you is solving the case for the missing accessibility. This is another little bit of a bully story, but we didn't mean it to be. So if you know anything about Able Gamers, you'll know that my chief operating officer is Steve Spong. He was down here in the corner of the slide that had all the different advocates on it that Brandon gave this morning. He's profoundly disabled. He's pretty much my brother, so I can say it. He's real disabled. He can only move about this much of his entire body. He's on a ventilator. He's on a giant wheelchair, and there's a nurse always following him. Can't hide. Cannot hide. So we were walking the floor of PAX. We had a little flyer. We were trying to talk to developers about how people with disabilities would approach their game. This was our idea. Again, we're on the outside of the ring of, and so we thought, here's a chance. Well, we get to a game called L.A. Noire. Anyone remember that game? And really nice, we approached the booth, and this gentleman that we later discovered was named Mario wanted to usher us in to play the game. Like, cut the entire line. Like, for some reason, I'll tell you, go to Disney with a handicap friend. It's the greatest thing in the world. And we couldn't because they double carpeted their booth. So, like, as soon as you stepped into their booth, it was like stepping into mud, and wheelchairs don't work on that. But what we asked was, hey, we'd like to talk to one of your developers about how people with disabilities would play games. And the girl that we were talking to was kind of hired help, and she's like, oh, I wouldn't really know that. Let me go get somebody for you. So Steve and I are kind of outside the booth. You guys are the booth. And 10 minutes later, a gentleman comes out, and he has our flyer, and he has it wound really tightly. And he goes, yeah, what do you guys need? And I'm like, well, we want to talk to you about how people with disabilities would play this game. And he goes, I'm going to stop you right there. He goes, I don't have time for this shit. And he folded up our flyer and pitched it in a garbage can and walked back into his booth. Now, Steve and I looked at each other because we've gotten a lot of reactions. We've gotten a lot of, or I haven't, or, you know, some songs and dances. But we've never got, I don't have time to talk about this shit. Well, anyone heard of Twitter? So we just casually tweeted out, was at Rockstar booth, RE accessibility, quote, I don't have time for that shit, end quote. Now, interestingly enough, we only had 4,000 followers at the time, and we made a stink. We now have 41,000 followers. So I suspect it would make an even bigger stink. So we go about our day, minding our own business. And I wake up the next morning, and there's a message in my inbox. And the message in my inbox was from a vice president of publishing for Rockstar. And they asked, like, hey, something's going on Twitter. I'd like to understand what happened. So at like 5:30 in the morning, I'm typing up what happened. And the person responded that the guy said, was he behind a plant or something? Because the guy had actually said, it was just this one guy wanting to talk to me about stupid stuff. The guy didn't even notice my friend Steve. And his comeback was behind a plant. I sent my response, and the woman came back, and she goes, I heard a similar story. It's not quite the same, but it was similar, and I really want to apologize. After PAX, let's have a phone call. So after PAX happened, and Rockstar, now keep in mind, guys, who here is a fan of Rockstar games? Be honest, all right? They're not really friendly. If you know anything about them as a community, you're not going to get much from them. So we have this phone call about a week after PAX, and the person says, well, what do you want? Like, what do you want? And I said, well, we just want to, like, we're a little charity. We don't like asking a lot. And we said, well, we want to just have a couple of developers in a room. Let's just have a conference call so we can talk about how people with disabilities would play L.A. Noir. And the woman said, no. She says, no, that's not going to happen. She's like, and I'm like, oh, well, Rockstar's living up to their opinion of them. And she goes, I think we've done you really wrong. Why don't you come to New York City and we can have that in person? And I said, well, I can't afford that. We're a tiny little charity. And she's like, we got it. Don't worry. So we planned this trip, and I drove up to Pittsburgh where Steve lived, and we jumped on a train, took a train to New York City. Rockstar had a fully accessible van waiting for us, and Mario, that person that I mentioned, was waiting on the platform of Penn Station. And they checked us into the Tribeca Hotel, which was $1,200 a night, four rooms, one for Steve and his nurse, his mom and me. And They came out and had dinner with us that night, the developers, and I found out later that we spent $4,000 at the restaurant. We spent the next day at the studio going over L.A. Noire bit by bit by bit. I'm sorry, I was looking at my slides. And we made changes to the game. They were making real notes right there because they were proud of this title. In retrospect, they probably shouldn't have been. And they really wanted to make sure that they heard our message. As an aside, one of the cool things that happened when you stay at the Tribeca Hotel is it's owned by Robert De Niro. And we were going to the studio. There was no place, because again, it's in Tribeca in Lower Manhattan, there was no place for the van to pull up so that Steve could load on. So Steve got to tell Robert De Niro's driver if he could send the Rolls Royce around so Steve's van could park where the Rolls Royce that belongs to Robert De Niro and is always on standby for Mr. De Niro would move so that the van could load up. And the guy did. It was pretty fun. We had this really great day talking to the studios. They took us to dinner that night. And we found out they were doing this on the day that the disc was in test because it had to be in the mail at midnight for gold so that it could get to the publisher so they could start the run. The day zero patch had 5 accessibility features added to it. 5, based on that conversation. 3 weeks had passed since we'd had the meeting and they already had fixes. This is Able Gamers. This is what we do. I put this in here for my Forza people. We use Forza a lot because it's a great driving game, and this young lady was actually driving for the first time and she was just ecstatic about it. Because, you know, she was driving. We always have this joke when they crash them, you know, Microsoft charges us for those cars. And we also never put we always use the Fiat because it's an underpowered piece of crap. And when you give someone who's never played Forza like a supercar, it's just a disaster. This is just some of the work that we've done. You know, we talk about accessibility all the time, and we talk about, you know, the great controller that's coming out, and we talk about these different fixes that we do, but sometimes accessibility is nothing but a piece of foam. On the screen, you see a gentleman who was at a convention that we wanted to do, and he was working another booth, and he kept coming over, and he wanted to play Fruit Ninja. But he had, and I can't say the name of the disorder he had, because it's about 2.5 feet long, but he had hands on his shoulders. He was missing an arm. And he was kind of like sneaking in front of the Fruit Ninja screen with the Kinect, and he was trying to get it to work, and it just wasn't seeing him because there wasn't enough movement there. And during lunch, I got this brilliant idea. We'd packed all of our equipment, these little green pieces of foam, and so I just handed them to him. And all of a sudden, the Kinect saw everything about him, and he sat there and was just like playing for hours. And if you can see in this bottom picture, his mom is actually crying because she never thought that he would ever be able to play a game like this. To parrot something that was said in an earlier talk, Able Gamers has a fun-first philosophy. Brandon said something about even if the game isn't playable by him, he's still a gamer, and we're the same way. We want games to be made because every game forwards the evolution of gaming, even if not everyone can play it. And you know, it's funny. Sorry, I'm just running over to look at my slide that comes next. Yeah. Sorry. Our fun first philosophy. This is our chapter 3. You have more power on your phone. There's more power in this room than the first 5 supercomputers that the government owned. Think about this. Gaming is everywhere. And gaming has nothing to do. It's so ubiquitous to what we do. We game everything. I don't know if you guys know this, but Cold Stone Creamery invented a game to teach their Cold Stone Creamery scoopery people on how to scoop ice cream, and they lowered the cost of the entire, across the entire organization, 22% just by gaming it, because they taught them how to portion correctly. Gaming is something we use as a tool. I will say, as the founder of Able Gamers, I get a lot of really well-meaning people approach me, and they say stuff to me like, I want to make a game for those with multiple sclerosis, or muscular dystrophy, or this third one, I'm not kidding, I can't figure out what a game would be, but stage 3 kidney disease. If you ever think, I want to make a game for those with, you have already failed. Because Mark's rule 2 is, people with disabilities are looking for experiences that support their needs and the needs of their family. They're looking for the social aspects. Gaming is a social, as a matter of fact, 56% of games that are played right now are social-based games, 56%. The other fact is, having a disability can be very isolating. One of the things we do, especially any parent that's here, you say something to your kid that is absolutely horrifying to the disabled community. When you and your kid are in public and you see someone with disabilities, you say something to the effect of, don't stare. Because you're trying to teach your kid good manners when it comes to interacting with people with disabilities, but what children actually hear is, don't interact. And people with disabilities will tell you time and time again that they are absolutely isolated in a crowd. And what gaming allows you to do, and it was spoken about in one of our earlier talks, is it lets you, I think Brandon, you said, it lets you be whatever you want to be. And now I'm so humbled because I'm no longer getting, I want to make a game for those with stage 3 kidney disease. I'm getting, I want to make games that supports this. I want to make games that bring everyone in place. And that, oh, that slide was messed up, I'm sorry. That support people. And, you know, Able Gamers, I, about a year ago, had a real crisis of conscience. When I started the organization 14 years ago, I spent so much time, as Brandon talked about, trying to tell people that make games that people with disabilities were a market. People with disabilities in the United States have $1 trillion in expendable income. And instead of telling you a sad story, because I can get you to do anything once for me for a sad story, there's a great story about MLB 13 where some kid was like, I can't play because I can't do this. And they added that one feature and it helped that one kid and it helped nobody else. But if I tell you about the market and I tell you the fact that there's money to be had, you'll want that money. And the industry is doing that. And that's where my crisis was. I spent so long trying to get you guys to understand that people with disabilities aren't special. We just want to play. And now you do. And we had to figure out what we were going to do next, because we were spending about 50% of our time beating on the door. And also, the weight of what has happened, I really put on my shoulders. I want you guys to think, a handful of people on the outside of the industry, some like Tara, who was on the outside of the industry and then went into the industry, a handful of people changed an organization, changed an industry that's worth $64 billion. I'm looking at Tara. Can you imagine where we are today, 5 years ago? I literally had a nervous breakdown a year ago thinking about this, because a handful of people, and it really is just a handful of us. It's like, I mean, we could all get on one of the Microsoft shuttles, changed a $64 billion industry, most of us from the outside. All of us starting from the outside. I want to tell you another secret about people with disabilities. This is one, again, that not only do people talk about. There are two types of people with disabilities, the born disabled and the becomes disabled. Now, I've never actually done this next slide before, but that's me. I became disabled. I was on a military career. I actually have a degree in clinical microbiology. So if anything itches, I could probably tell you what it is. And one night, I was working the night shift, and I went upstairs to get a pile of specimens, so think wet stuff that comes out of your body. And as I was going down the stairs at about 1:30 in the morning, on a very old pair of stairs and military leather-bottomed shoes, I slipped, I went over, and I shattered my spine in three places. I laid on the floor till 5 o'clock when a stat cerebral spinal fluid came in, and they were calling microbiology, and it wasn't answering the phone, so someone went downstairs, because you always put microbiology in the basement because it stinks. And they found me. And I was rushed to from Malcolm Grove Medical Center, which is, I was actually a liaison for Air Force One, which is why Air Force One's there. I used to issue the blood that used to go out to Air Force One every time the president left. They rushed me to Bethesda Naval Hospital where I had surgery, and I was never supposed to walk again. So I'm technically what's called an incomplete paraplegic. Right here is where my break was. People that were born disabled seek ways to integrate into society. People that became disabled, because they have that frame of reference, seek to try to get back to where they were. I was talking to Steve, who's born disabled, and why we talk about this, and I wanted to come up with a test just to kind of show you guys how much you take things for granted versus someone who was potentially born disabled. I want you guys to all think of this question, and I asked Steve this. I said, okay, Steve, I can prove to you that we're two totally different people and you don't know my world. And he said, okay, do it. I said, where's the hot water on the sink? Where's your hot water, guys? It's over here, right? Steve didn't know that because he's never turned a sink on in his life. He was trying to Google it, and I said, I heard you Googling. And he's like, wow, you got me there. Chapter 4. I'm so excited because now that I don't have to teach you guys that we're marketing constantly, now that I don't have to like browbeat that people with disabilities want to play and we don't want anything special, we want to just be with our friends, we're doing cool stuff. So I'm about to show you something that's never been seen before, but for a lot of you Microsoft people are going to be really excited. I have to read this long disclaimer. The Able Gamers Player Panel is a collaboration between the University of York and the Able Gamers, funded by a research priming fund of the University of York through the justice and equality theme and from the Melrill Center for Tolerance. All the data that's about to be presented, and this is from Jen Beeston, a PhD student on an intellectual blog. You guys read the rest of that, please. Point being is we're actually doing research now into gamers with disabilities. I think it's so interesting is some of the stuff I'm going to go over, we've talked about in this talk, and you guys are going to be really surprised. I will say for my visually impaired friends, all of the graphs and charts that I have, if you go to bit.ly, which is bit.ly.com/ablegamers67, I have a PDF that has all the data that makes up these graphs, so that if you want to check out the graphs later, just let me know, and all the data is there for you. So we did a study. So the Able Gamers Player Panel is a group of 427 now, people with disabilities who've given us all their demographic information and are available for studies. Interesting, they're available to you guys too. For the controller that just came out, we supplied 14 people to help test it through the Able Gamers Player Panel. Right?
Yes.
Bryce said we need more testers. We pulled testers that met a criteria that fit, and we sent them controllers. We did this study, and the makeup of this study is interesting. 25% of the people had upper limb physical disabilities. 24% had lower limb physical disabilities. That would be me. 12% were other. But as you guys can see, our low vision was 6%, and our blind was 3%, and deaf was 2%, I believe. So you guys want to guess what games people with disabilities are playing today? What the top three games that they want to play? Who wants to start? was number one? Anyone? No. Sadly, Destiny 2. Not sadly, this is not the one that I'm sad about. This one I'm good about. What's the one I'm sad about? Oh, yeah, it's the next one. Any guesses on number two? Solitaire. World of Warcraft. I'm not a fan. Able Gamers was actually was the website that Able Gamers parked on the very first time was a fan site I'd created for EverQuest 2. Able Gamers was founded because my sister was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2002, and in 2004 we were going to play that night because she was our sugar mama. She had all the money, and she helped us run our quests. Multiple sclerosis had decided that her mousing hand wasn't going to work that night. And so I waited for the ventrilo for my friend. Camellia has joined the channel, which is what I knew was going to be a great time. And I didn't hear that. And so I picked up the phone, and her husband, Albert, who was actually my dorm mate in the military, I had introduced them, and they were still married. And I could hear Stephanie crying in the background. And so MS had decided that her mousing hand wasn't going to work. So I was a person with disabilities, but my disability doesn't affect my gaming. So I spent that night really looking for stuff for her because this was something we did. She was in North Las Vegas. Me and my husband were in DC. We used video games to stay together as a family. And I wasn't going to let video games like go away from her. And we wasn't really finding anything that helped her. So she and I met the next day over the phone, and we decided that if disabilities were something that was affecting how our family was gaming, that there might be other people out there that were having the same problem. Kind of was right. And so, you know, it was an EverQuest site. So World of Warcraft, to me, dumbed down the MMORPG to the point where it's almost unplayable. Any guesses on the third game? It's Overwatch. So I guess that t-shirt thing must have really worked, because Activision is getting a lot of people with disability money. The next piece of data that I want to talk to you about is assistive technology usage. Of the 230 participants, 156 indicated that they did not use any assistive technology. 77 did not use any accessible features, and 47 did not use any assistive technology or essentials to play with. 32% used AT. By the way, there will be a link at the end of this for you to pull this entire study down. Here's the breakdown of it, which was other technology was number one, custom controllers, alternate PC mice, screen readers, alternate controllers, eye tracking, one-handed, and there was actually a couple people that use VR headsets, and we've pulled them aside to understand exactly how they're using them so that we can add more value to this. Any of this interesting? Any of this kind of what you would expect? Let the shift change happen. The next question asked, 67% said they use software solutions to overcome issues. They're allowed to select from more than one option, and there was a total of 428 options selected, with each person selecting an average of 2.69 items. The number one item that they needed or wanted was key remapping. Number two, turning on subtitles. Here's one of the things that I want to talk about the presentation before me. Keep in mind that those who were deaf only represented 2% of this group, and hard of hearing, 5%. What we're finding through the studies is people with cognitive disabilities rely heavily on subtitles to give them another layer of understanding. So when you think like, well, I'm doing this for this group, you're not. It's actually much broader than that. And that's where we talked about options and we talked about this idea. You have no idea. There's a study from Microsoft back in the early that says 81% of people that use Windows turn on or use an accessibility feature whether they know it or not. Who's used the little slider in PowerPoint to make things bigger or smaller? That's an accessibility feature. Number three, text enlargement. Again, they're enlarging the text, but that outweighs the sample size of people who said that they were having vision issues. Why is that? Because, again, they're wanting to customize the gaming space to match their needs and their wants. Are they playing alone? So we asked them to rate do not play, sometimes play, or very often across single player, local multiplayer, online multi, co-op multi, competitive multi, and one-on-one. As you can see, and I actually really can, it's funny, I see something that's really tragic about people with disabilities in this graph. And the graph is the one-on-one. A lot of people with disabilities say that they don't really play one-on-one. And that's because of the stigma of being disabled and that need to have a support group behind them. I'm not really worried about the local multiplayer because, frankly, like local LANs are getting rarer and rarer. What I do love seeing, though, is the sometimes and very often across all of the online stuff. Guys, who here has logged into a game and not seen a friend and went to go find another game to play? That means you didn't log into that game to play that game. You logged in to play that game with that friend or friends. You know, who's hunted for a friend to figure out what game they're in? Yeah, me too. We asked them who they're playing with. Blue was real life friends, friends of friends, online friends, guilds and clans, and strangers. The data shows, and again, the local multiplayer, you're always going to be playing with real life friends because how else would you set up a LAN? I love the online friend is so high on all of these. I know so many people with disabilities who've met the loves of their lives through games. Because games allow you to present yourself in a way that the, what I always call the trappings of disability, don't define you. I can't see the slide, so I have no idea what's coming up next. Communication channels, how they're communicating in game. There wasn't a really good way of putting this into a slide, so I'll just let you know that 59 said they use Discord. 33 used PlayStation chat, 26 used Xbox party chat, 25 said Skype, 11 TeamSpeak, 2 Mumble, and 1 Ventrilo. Showing my age, because back in the day it was all Ventrilo, that was the only thing we had. This was one of the ones that I thought was the most powerful, and is why they play. So why did people with disabilities in our study say they played? The number one reason was to have fun. In fact, 98.7% of the study participants said this was the reason why they played. 86.5, I actually am numelectic. So I have dyslexia of numbers. So you'll often see when I look at a number, I look away because it's the only way I can say it. 86.5 said that they helped them to relax. Who here plays video games to help them relax? If you didn't raise your hand, you're not a gamer. Number three, to be a part of a community. We're social creatures. Even the most introverted among us still has other little introvert friends. It's true. My husband, he's like, you can take me to one Christmas party every 2 years, that's it. But even he gets lonely sometimes and we have friends over at the house. Fourth reason, to challenge myself. I think that number is wrong. I think it's supposed to be 30.77. We're looking for a way to challenge themselves. Who here plays a game because it's easy? Not really. You want to play a game because you're looking for that challenge. People with disabilities the same way. The challenges they might be overcoming might be different than the ones you're doing, but they're still wanting that sense of achievement. You know, when you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, achievement, community, belonging are all part of this third and fourth tier of Maslow. Who's familiar with Maslow? It's a really outdated thing, but it's a good like transition. The first thing you look for is food and shelter. Then you look for safety. And then you start looking for community, achievement, well-being. To escape reality, as a person with disabilities, as a person that works with people with disabilities all the time, escaping reality is sometimes the only thing that keeps you going to the next day. To socialize, 65% of those on the player panel said they're looking for new friends and socialize. Does any of this surprise you guys? Isn't it very similar, though, to what everyone's looking for? You can actually download this entire study right here. It is bit.ly/ablegamers979. I just threw some numbers at the end of it so that it was... So you can download this full study. This is a great slide. Anybody have any questions for me? Come on, I still have 10 minutes. You guys got to fill it up. Yes?
So obviously there's a lot of work that goes into AT adaptation in terms of making a specific controller work with a specific condition. But where do you go to try and figure out what games are actually viable for a given scenario, given like you can only like do two head switches because you've got cerebral palsy or you're low vision or whatever? What's your go-to to try and figure that out?
So the go-to that Able Gamers, so Able Gamers has a facility in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia. We have a 3,600 square foot lab where people with disabilities can come in and go through all of the equipment and we'll create a control. I always, when we start an engagement like that, the first thing someone always tells me is, well, I have muscular dystrophy or I have, you know, fill-in disease here, and I say, I don't really care. All I want to do is exploit movement. So we talk about what you can move. I have switches that, you know, can go for the head, the fingers, the foot, your eyebrow. They're called twitch switches. And all we're trying to do is exploit movement. What I will say is we are seeing an evolution within the game space where through the work of people like Tara, and we are seeing different options put in. I will tell you this, people with disabilities are largely okay if you felt like you needed to turn the achievement system off but make a game easier to play. They're okay with that because they just want to devour the content. The game that was mentioned earlier, Deus Ex, I can never say that game. It has, when you first get into it, it has four different things at the very front, and it's like, tell me a story, and it goes all the way to like, you know, the hardest thing ever. I talked to the lead developer of that, and I said, why did you do that? Because, you know, that's a huge accessibility feature. And what he told me was, he said, because over 60% of my budget went into voice, script, and art. And if you can't get past the first jump puzzle, while I've already got your money, you are missing the thing I worked so hard on, which was to tell you a really good story. So we put the mode in, tell me a story, which requires you to do almost nothing but like press a single button to get through the game, because we wanted you to enjoy the content we worked so hard to create. It does turn the achievements off on that, though, because there's really very little challenge. No one's ever complained about it. So does that kind of answer your question? Maybe?
Not really, but I'm happy to sidebar later.
Yeah.
I don't want to rat hole.
Well, you can. I got time. No one else is asking anything. Other questions? Before you wrap me, okay.
Cool. I'm not wrapping you. I'm just,
yeah, don't wrap me
got
up.
Got a microphone here. Thank you.
Okay, Mark, I just wanted to ask this one quick question regarding the, you talked a lot about the actual gaming space and how game developers and try to integrate features into their games. My question is have you had a chance to talk with game developers on integrating features within the game development process regarding accessibility?
So there are a few groups out there, and I really wish I could find a leader to take it because I just don't have the bandwidth for it. But there are several people out there that are working, for instance, to make plugins for Unity and things like that, to work with closed captioning, to work with colorblind modes. I really wish I could find a leader in the gaming space that could kind of spearhead and wrangle the group. Mm-hmm. But there are a bunch of people who are independently working on creating pipeline tools for accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that thinking accessibility earlier in your design process is obviously a way to get accessibility cheaper. But the answer to your question is yes, but it's not a unified front. I know, like, for instance, there's Victoria who's working on a plugin for closed captioning in Unity. I know another guy, Christopher, who's trying to figure out how to like make a canned colorblind. But there's not a unified effort, and I need someone in the game space to take that. If you want to be that person, we'll trade cards later.
More than happy to do okay. It, because this is just coming from a personal standpoint. I actually want to make games specifically regarding the animation standpoint, but to be perfectly honest, working in Maya is a little bit of a pain in the butt, mostly because there are some plugins and some shortcuts that require the use of multiple keys, and missing a hand, it's not exactly easy to work with. So if I could spear something like that, I'd be more than delighted to do it.
Excellent. We'll trade cards afterwards.
Other questions?
I just wanted to ask you about a contrast between two things you've mentioned. So you were just recently talking about that story about Deus Ex and a story mode that basically makes it super easy to go through the game with minimal player input. But then right before that, you were talking about the motivations for disabled gamers, and the number four one was 77% were playing games to challenge themselves. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that sort of, there's an inherent conflict there between trying to design games for disabled gamers in ways that allow them to engage with them on their own terms and challenge themselves versus just trying to make sure there's a way to get a foot in the door so people can grapple with the content on some level at all.
I actually don't think there's a conflict there, because everyone approaches what challenges them from their standpoint. So if you're a cognitively disabled person, Tell Me a Story might be challenging, and it might be, but it also might be what you need to go through first in order to take the next mode, because you need an understanding of how the story is going to lay out, because that's just the nature of your disability. What's great about that example was there are four play modes, so you can kind of tailor the one that's the challenge for you. One of the things I always say is like, well, I'm making a game accessible. Accessible, and the word accessibility is a really weird word, because everything is accessible from the standpoint of the person who's using the technology. What's accessible to me might be different than what's accessible for him or you. So when people are like, well, I'm trying to make things accessible, the fact that it exists is accessible. You want it to be consumable by more people. These are the features and stuff that you need to add. So does that make sense? It is challenges defined by your current state and where you need to go, where you want to go forward. And we all are somewhere different in that. I can't play Madden at all. When I will say Madden did a really good thing about 5 years ago. They let you play like a scrimmage at the very beginning, and then they tailored the game to take over certain things for you based on how well you did there. There's a complete accessible feature that was just hidden because they wanted the game to be more accessible to people who hadn't played football games in it before, because they wanted to sell football games. Any other questions?